Hello and welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today you're in for a treat. We are joined by the Rapid Growth Guy. So who is he? He's responsible for five multi-million dollar business success stories. Forbes call him the real deal. Global gurus list him as a top 30 sales professional, and Selling Power magazine just named him their 2023 Sales Kickoff Speaker of the Year. So some real accolades. So he's the best-selling author of the Introvert's Edge book series, which has sold over 100,000 copies and has been translated into 15 languages. Today's guest is going to leave us with so many takeaways when it comes to sales. It's Matthew Pollard. Matthew, how are you?
Mate, I'm ecstatic to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. Good stuff. Well, thank you for joining us. I know that you are busy when you're not doing your sales kickoff. So we start the podcast with the same question every time. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
So I guess the best way to segue into this is who am I versus who I should have been? The answer of who I should have been would be probably a moderately happy data entry person. And I guess my entire story of falling into sales and really 93 doors before my first sale and teaching myself how to sell, watching YouTube videos, and then becoming the number one salesperson, the largest sales and marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere, kind of qualifies me in two ways. One is that, as you mentioned in my awards, that I've gone from having no business in sales to being one of the top 30 sales professionals on the planet, which especially is humbling considering I'm an introvert, which I would have thought I was the only one, right? Because everybody knows that introverts can't sell. Turns out I'm not. As a matter of fact, many of the people at the top just don't think it's cool to mention that they're introverted. And I'm relatively committed to helping introverts realize they're not second-class citizens. Their path to success is just different to that of an extrovert. And funnily enough, what I tend to do, if you think about the problem that I solve, well, the first thing I do is I talk about how introverts are kind of terrible at sales when we don't follow a sales system, one that's built for our introverted nature. But truthfully, extroverts are terrible at sales too when it comes to not following a system some of the time, because we all experience their roller coaster ride of selling. And because of that, they just don't get themselves to the best that they can be unless they follow a regimented system to take their mood out of the equation. And so what you'll find that I do, especially for with corporations, is help them realize that sales systems are always the most important thing. Most corporations know that that's the case, but have never successfully operationalized the sales system. So I say, okay, let's start with one thing that will give you huge ROI, shorten sales cycles, increase closure rates, and drastically increase the speed that you onboard new team members, and that is creating a story playbook. And then from that, moving straight into small business. It's the same thing. You don't want to start with a big sales system, but there's a lot you can do before you even get to sales that really allows you to create growth.
Well, we're definitely going to come back to digging into those systems because that's something that I know me and Zach are going to geek out on. But let's just go back. So you should have been a lovely data entry man, but you didn't. You're now who you are, Matthew Pollard, the rapid growth guy. So where was that crossroads in your life? Like, how did you fall into sales? And talk me through that story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the points that I should make first is, there are a lot of introverts that don't want to be in sales, and there's a lot of introverts that don't want to run their own businesses. And good for you, right? Like, I'm not saying that anybody needs to be in sales. I will say, if you're undergrad qualified, sales has a tremendous ability to earn money that you may not be able to get if you're not in sales. But for a lot of people, they don't want to have their own business, i.e., they don't want to sell, but they would like the flexibility and have a business that revolves around them, their family, and their life, where they get to do things their way. The problem is that I'm not, a lot of people feel like everybody's saying, if you don't own your own small business, you're really not living up to your potential. And a lot of introverts just want to be writers. They just want to be coders. They don't want to have one of these business leader jobs, sales jobs, business ownership jobs in a lot of cases, but where they have to be the leader otherwise. And for those people, I'm not suggesting that you do. What I do find, though, is for a lot of introverts, they resign themselves to careers that aren't what they want because they believe they can't do these things. So for me, I would have honestly probably been a relatively happy data entry person, but I would never give up the life that I have today for that. And that's why I'm saying it's important that you believe that you can, then make a choice on whether or not you actually want to. And I think that, my story really you know, really encapsulates that, because I mean, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader in late high school. I was super introverted. I mean, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And I will say I got diagnosed with this thing called Erlen syndrome in late high school. And I mean, basically that means I put on a funny pair of colored lenses and miraculously I can learn to read, which obviously didn't help me with my confidence, but also I couldn't read like everyone else. I had to start the process of learning to read. So the last 2 years of high school was tough for me. And I got into the top 20% of my state, but I was burned out. So my family and I all agreed that I was going to take a year off to, you know, find myself. I guess that's what a lot of people in their 20s or sometimes even 30s these days do. But my dad broke his back 80 hours a week supporting the family. There was no way he was going to be okay with me just, you know, sitting on the couch watching Oprah or travel. We didn't have the money to travel the world or anything like that. So I took a job at a real estate agency. And I know a lot of people are probably thinking, oh, you're out selling. No, I was the guy doing data entry, right? I had this look on my face like, don't speak to me. I'm here to find myself. Well, 3 weeks into that job, I lose it because they shut down the office. And this is just before Christmas time in Melbourne, Australia. So for those people that I'm going to say that have the funny accents, because probably everyone's listening thinking I'm the one with the funny accent. But for those people that don't know Australia well, it's summer and Christmas time at the same time. So everybody goes on holidays on the 20th of December. And no one really comes back until the 15th or 20th of January. So for the employers listening, even for the senior leaders listening, I mean, think about how many people you're hiring if you want to have a month off without being distracted with your family. You're not hiring anyone. Well, the only places that I could find jobs, and there were three jobs in the paper at that time, there were all these things called commission-only sales roles. So for a guy that struggled to talk to his own friends, let alone anyone else, that had really bad acne, that always felt people were judging him on that, that felt like the slow kid, and who had these funny colored lenses, that is not the role that I wanted to apply for, but it was less scary than going home and telling dad I was out of work. So I applied for all three jobs, and I got three job interviews. And then I got three job offers and I'm like, maybe they see something in me that I don't see in myself. So I took this job doing business to business telecommunications. And I remember going into day one with a little quiet confidence and my trainer put that to bed really quickly. He's like, Matt, we just hire everyone. We've just got this saying, we throw mud up against the wall, we see what sticks. Fun saying, I guess, until you realize you're the mud. So here I am after 5 days product training, not a single second of sales training, and I get dropped off on this road called Sydney Road in Melbourne, Australia. I mean, it's still the stuff of nightmares. It's like 1,000 doors on each side. And I just get told to go sell telecommunications, which was great. I knew everything about telecommunications now. I've had 5 days training, not a single second of sales training though. So no idea what to say when I walk in the door. So I take a deep breath and I walk in and I say I was luckily applied. Politely told to leave, because shortly after that, I was less politely told to leave. Then I was sworn at. But I think my personal favorite was always getting told to go and get a real job. I mean, this was the only job I could get. And so I just kept on going, door after door, sworn at, told to get a real job, got to my 93rd door, and I made my first sale, which was about $70. And I know everyone here listening that's in sales, they remember still to this day the excitement of their first sale. The thing is, mine was followed about 45 seconds later with this feeling of dread that I have to do this again tomorrow and the next day and the next. And the whole idea of that was not okay. But I wasn't exactly willing to give up and go back and tell dad I'm out of work. So I also wasn't willing to accept what I think a lot of introverts accept for themselves, and even a lot of extroverts, to be honest, accept subpar performance. So I decided that sales had to be a system, because without it, my year was going to be horrible. So I went, how am I going to learn this system? And I went, well, I'm not picking up a Zig Ziglar book or a Brian Tracy book. That will take me a year to read, let alone apply. So I typed in, I just took a punt on this. I typed in the word sales system in YouTube. And it blows me away, by the way, how many people spend money on training before they ever go there. Back then I had no money, so I had no choice. But all these videos came up. And then what I found was by going through each video, I realized there was a lot of similarities in systems, but there were a series of steps. So I'd spend 8 hours in the field applying what I learned that night before. And then I'd spend 8 hours that night preparing the next step or perfecting what I was working on. And then I'd spend 16 hours a day on weekends practicing. I know this doesn't sound fun to anyone and there are smarter ways to do it now, but very quickly I got better. Soon it was 71 doors, then 42, and then 38, and then 18, and then 9, and then 3. About 6 weeks in, my manager pulls me aside, and he had the same face that my last manager had when I was about to lose my job. And I thought I was about to get fired, because I was the quiet guy that handed my paperwork in downstairs, didn't really talk to anyone. And he's like, Matt, we're kind of blown away by this. We just got our national sales figures, which back then they just got them once a month. And it turns out you're the number one salesperson in the company, which, as I said, turned out to be the largest sales and marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere. which was exciting for a second until they gave me this next daunting statement, which was, if you can sell, you can obviously manage, which is the most ridiculous thing in the world. I don't know why people think that. And I was like, I have no idea how to manage. I'm scared of my own shadow. I can do it like in a private area, but you know, when I'm talking to someone, they're like, no, run up against the wall. We'll give you 20 people, see what sticks. Everybody quit within 24 hours. But I went back to YouTube, I learned to manage. I hope people are understanding that everything is now a skill that can be learned and mastered. That is literally what I learned. But I got promoted like 7 times in the space of 12 months because I became known as the guy that could get introverts to sell, but also get extroverts to stop having that, you know, roller coaster ride of selling. And then, you know, I started my own business, and fast forward just shy of a decade, I've been responsible for 5 multi-million dollar success stories.
Wow. Do you know what I'm taking from that? I'd love to meet your dad. How motivating to have a dad like that, that makes you get up and go and kick doors down every day.
Do you know what's interesting? My father never, like, you hear stories of, you know, kids that get beaten around by their dads and the terror of dad. My dad never laid a hand on me. It was just that I did not want to disappoint dad. And he always showed this unbelievable respect for me, which made me, it made it almost an impossibility for me not to let him down, because I had to push myself. It wasn't that I would come home and he would just grill me. He would come home and ask me questions for why I didn't do it anyway. And I couldn't have that. And it was so weird. The cycle, I guess it was, you know, he was conditioning me really because he knew that I did have disadvantages. And truthfully, I think all along he knew that. I mean, I think about anybody that's listening, by the way, you know, the people that sales gravitates to, I don't think there's many of us that didn't have something happen to us in our earlier life. Like, we all have these backstories of how we got into sales. And I don't think there's anyone that would disagree with that, that when you say the adversities you face tend to seed the success of your future. The people that find their way into sales, a lot of times the world did not work for us, and therefore we found our way into sales. Now, that may be because, you know, we were the loudmouth extrovert and we wouldn't listen to our teacher, so we didn't do too well. Or perhaps you were the slow kid like me that just found your way into sales by luck. And truthfully, that's why I'm so passionate about this, because I feel like a lot of people that find their way into business, they're running their own businesses. The same is true, but there's lots of people that are career professionals that could be running their own businesses, could be the leaders in their organizations, could be Zig Ziglar was an introvert, for crying out loud. Like, if you think that you're introvert, poor Johnny's an introvert. He can't sell or manage. Are you kidding me? If Zig Ziglar can be the most well-known sales trader, sales leader on the planet, what is our excuse? And what is our leader's excuse for accepting subpar performance? And the answer is simple. If you accept that introversion is a barrier to success, then you're always going to accept subpar performance. If you just realize that it's a skills gap like anything else, I mean, some might say extroverts aren't the best listeners. They aren't the best people at empathy, but they understand those are learnable skills. And worse, HR does too. But for introverts, poor Sarah's an introvert. We just can't teach her how to sell, or we can't put her in that leadership position. And I think that was really coming back to my father. That was the thing that I think he never accepted, that limitation was even a real thing. It was always, you know, I mean, if we go back 3 generations, my grandfather worked in a mine in Cardiff, in Wales, right? In the UK. I mean, Wales is usually the butt of the jokes in a lot of, you know, English humor. And then the next generation, you know, my grandfather worked in a factory. My dad was the first to get a degree, but he was an industrial chemist, and I was the first entrepreneur. Like, the thing is, we live in this world where technology is advancing so much, where people's belief in human potential is advancing so much. It's almost an embarrassment now that we believe that introversion is a disadvantage. It's just a skills gap. Yet there are so many other things that are so far more important and so much harder to overcome. Yet introversion still seems to be this line that we feel like, oh no, that's a wall that nobody can get through.
So let's get into that a little bit more then. So let's say if you're employing a sales team, and you have in the dock of people you could hire, you've got your extroverted gift of the gab salespeople that are the cliche salespeople that you could bring in, or you've got the introverted, interesting background kind of people. What are the pros and cons of both?
Well, the way you frame that question implies that I'm probably going to do some extrovert bashing, which I absolutely am not going to do, right? Right? You've got this cool introvert and then that kind of, you know, usual
cliche.
Extrovert.
Yeah,
cliche, exactly. Extrovert. Yeah. So let me frame it this way. So we all have our burdens to bear. And a lot of times when I do sales kickoffs, I talk about storytelling. and how storytelling can shorten sales cycles, increase closure rates, and drastically reduce the time it takes to onboard a staff member. Because think about stories, like you can inherit 30 years of experience by learning one story. And if you're, I don't have any stories, I just started. Well, that's not true. Your organization's got decades of experience. Changing the word I worked with a customer to we worked with a customer means you can inherit that story. But what's interesting is the cliche salesperson, if you like, goes, well, no, I prefer to tell it my way. What they're saying is I can't be bothered learning it and I prefer to just wing things. Well, that's not going to create a predictable sales methodology for you. But the thing is that they need somebody that is going to tell them, inspire them, that learning this story, the pain is worth the gain. The same is true for the introvert. They don't believe, I mean, who's going to train hard for a marathon? They believe that they've got no chance of winning or even placing or even finishing. So for an introvert, it's different. They need to be inspired that as an introvert, they can. And so what's really interesting is I stand in front of groups and I will talk about the fact that we all have our burdens to bear. But the difference is that, I mean, Brian Tracy, the biggest extrovert on the planet, will say that the top 10% of all sales performers have a planned presentation. The bottom 80% will say whatever comes out of their mouth. And of course, the extroverts sit at the top of that. The introverts sit at the bottom. But Jeffrey Gittimore, who's a good friend of mine, I mean, he's a big extrovert as well. And I was on his Sell or Die podcast. And for the listeners listening, you should definitely check out our episode because I think he interviews people for like 20 minutes. And we were like an hour and a half gasbagging. I'm not sure if gasbagging is a word they use in the United States, but it just means talking on and getting into all these different... It was more like I was sitting over coffee or having a beer and we were just, you know, getting along and chatting. But he said that, you know, he was a great salesperson, a great gift of gab salesperson, but he couldn't train a soul. So if you're thinking about getting into sales leadership, he couldn't train a soul because he just winged things. And it's really hard to say, hey, Zach, it's easy. Just do this. When it's winged, like how does somebody learn that? So if you think about your sales team, statistically, at least around half of them are going to be introverted that can't follow. And a lot of the other extroverts have different personality gifts, in which case they can't copy it your way. So all you're doing is basically hoping that you get a load of shining stars that aren't really even loyal to you. Like, why would you want to hire a bunch of people that are like, it's because of my big personality that I can take anywhere. I'm a soldier of fortune. I don't care about your product and your employment. I can take it anywhere. Now, sure, that changes when they get to 50 and realize that their energy levels are going down. And now they don't want to leave, but they also don't want to do the work. And they're hoping their tenure supports them. The thing you'll find with an introvert is if you can give them a proper sales system, they will hold on to it for dear life. And because of that, that's why they always dominate in sales. And that's why if you go to the top 30 sales list, sure, the top two, which is your Grant Cardone and your Jordan Belfort, they are extroverted. But if you go any further than that, you're going to start to see introverts pop up on that list because they hold on to a system for dear life. Now, you won't find an extrovert on that list that doesn't gravitate to a system, yet your best sales people often will say, I won't follow one. And that's what's really unfortunate when I see, especially corporate sales. They make this decision that they're going to operationalize some sales process. And they're always buying these big sales methodologies. And, you know, the senior director of selling for the largest cloud-based company on the planet says, we're going to push this initiative. That's until they leave in 12 months and no one's got any interest in it anymore, by the way. But what happens is they say, we're going to push this initiative 8 months in. They can't get their best salespeople to buy into it. They can't get their lower performers to buy into it because they still feel that sales isn't really for them. So they're kind of phoning it in. HR's not really pushing them. Sales leaders aren't pushing them because they accept subpar performance. So what I always suggest is we need to reconstruct how we do this. So the first thing I always suggest is that story is the easiest thing to learn. It's the easiest thing to operationalize. And by the way, most of your best salespeople are still using fire hoses of information mixed with communication razzle-dazzle, right? The razzle-dazzle is not copyable, and the jargon they throw at their customers isn't helpful. It overwhelms the customer. For the extroverts, the solution specialists, they're just using jargon. No wonder they can't buy. The customer these days is becoming much more educated, and the introvert doesn't like to be questioned, so it ends up a fight. And that's why, I mean, especially in consensus sale now, there's no relationship there. So story fixes all those problems. Story, firstly, people remember up to 22 times more information, but more importantly, it stops you throwing a fire hose of jargon at people because it has to be specific to the story. So it's more memorable. People are more likely to walk away feeling like they've got a connection with you as well because story activates the reticular activating system of a person's brain. So if you're an introvert, using a story. It's why when I do sales kickoffs, the first thing I do is walk up and tell a story, because I'm still, to this day, nervous. I stand in front of a couple of thousand people, and I am nervous. But when I get on stage, I have this structured line that I say, and then I get straight into a story, and I feel myself at ease, and everybody in the audience at ease, because the reticular activating system of everybody's brains is synchronizing, and it creates artificial rapport. For an introvert, this leads to us being able to create super deep rapport. For the extrovert, trust me when I say this, your artificial rapport doesn't stick with them like a story does. They may think they liked you, they may think that they developed a relationship, but it's not deep enough. Story actually fosters a much stronger tie, plus they remember what you said afterwards. And it means that you can leave some of that razzle dazzle at home, which means if you ever want to get to sales leadership, it's actually teachable. And then more importantly, story short circuits the logical mind. You speak directly to the emotional mind. So, by the way, the difference is, especially if you're doing cold call, the logical mind's like, that won't work for me. My situation's different. I don't have time for this. In sales, send me a proposal. That was too complicated. The emotional mind, when it hears a story, short circuits that part of the brain, goes straight to the emotional part of the brain, literally goes story time, assumes all the detail as fact, and listens for the moral. And if the moral is we work with someone just like you, and we got them to an amazing outcome, they'll see that you can do that for them as well, because they now have seen, they felt that tangible application of what it is that you do. So when I look at corporate sales teams specifically, I find that, gosh, the reason why nothing changes is because it's too Herculean an effort. Firstly, they're trying to use sales systems. Half the audience believes that sales systems are only for extroverts. The ability to sell is only for extroverts. So you have to embolden the quiet achievers to believe that they can, which is where an introvert, I mean, extroverts can get people to believe in themselves too, but they feel a lot of times it's embarrassing to even, you know, a lot of them, even introverts are embarrassed to out themselves as introverts. So you need to get everybody on board to believe that they can. The extroverts have got to listen. The introverts have got to believe in themselves. You then need to remove the burden of an entire sales system that's going to take a year to fail to operationalize and pick one battlefield and win on that battlefield. Make it super easy, create a few stories, get everybody to get to an ROI by using those stories. Don't just write them, but get them to change their behavior and use them. Get that ROI and get them to invest some of that return on investment in time saved, money made, because nothing's worse than the time lost from deals you don't close, into the next steps in the sales process. And then all of a sudden you create this tidal wave of continuous improvement inside an entire organization. What I find is that leaders usually sit in two buckets. One, and this is really interesting, when I spoke at the AAISP, which is the American Association of Inside Sales Professionals. Yes, very long name. But think about the detail, the people that are in this room is the best in the business of every major tech company, every major airline. Think about the, oh my gosh, if I was in sales, I'd love to work for that company. They're all there. And I did a survey. So I did the whole, you know, global conference. And then I did a leadership retreat. And before the leadership retreat, I asked this simple question. Are you an introvert or are you an extrovert? And it was just a text field response because I wanted to see what came back. And you would be blown away with how many people said, I don't know. That's not scary compared to the people that said, oh, I was introverted, but don't worry, I'm not introverted anymore. Or, oh, I'm a recovering introvert. Like it's a disease. I mean, the thing you've got to understand is if you're a leader that thinks that way, think about how you're treating your introverted staff, even as an introvert yourself. You can't change who you are. Introversion is just where you draw your energy. It has nothing to do with your ability to sell. As a matter of fact, I believe introverts have the edge just because they'll hold on to a sales system for dear life. The problem is that the extroverts believe their introverts can't sell and see it as a disease that they have to recover from. And even some of the introverts won't admit to inspire their own introverted team because they were embarrassed that they were and they believe they now aren't.
And that, well, let's get into the nitty-gritty then, because I want the audience to be able to like take something really tangible from this. So you talk a lot about like procedures and strategy. I read online about a 7-step strategy. So somebody that wants to get good now, they're like here, they're like watching you on YouTube, they've got their notepad and they're going to their commission only job tomorrow. What are the 7 steps? What do they need to be doing, Matthew?
You know, let me frame it this way. So firstly, while I should probably, you know, trumpet my 7-step process. The truth is, any systematic process for sales will allow you to get to success. What I find is most people don't follow systematic processes. What they do is just wing what they do. So let me say this, and my publisher's going to hate me when I say this, but you don't need to buy my book to get my 7 steps to a sale. Like if you literally go to theintrovertsedge.com, you can download the first chapter. Firstly, if you're an introvert, it'll convince you that you can sell as an introvert. As a matter of fact, you're amazing at it. But then what I say is this, if you grab what you currently say and put it under those 7 steps, you'll quickly realize a whole bunch of stuff doesn't fit. Throw that out. You shouldn't be saying it to the customers. That's the fire hose of information, those sorts of things. Then you'll realize there's some things out of order, which is why the customers get frustrated. It's why they take over the sale. It's why they start asking about price way too soon. Then you'll realize there's some gaping holes, usually around asking the right questions, not just questions for questions' sake, and then telling great stories. So let's focus, because I've just said most people focus on the entire sales system, and that is the frontier that they're not ready for yet. Just do that and you'll double your sales in the next 60 days. Let's talk about story in general, because what I find is most people think that they tell great stories, and the truth is they're just wrong, right? Their stories are more, customer wanted this, so we gave it to them. So, right? It's not a story, it's a case study. It's like seeing, a CNN report. Customer reported this issue and we were able to help do it. And by the way, don't ask your marketing team for help with this. They should be able to help. And with training, they could be able to help. But if they hand you a case study, it's like, this customer, John, was so lucky to have met us because we transformed their life because we're so amazing. No one likes that stuff. What I'm talking about is a story should be more like a theatrical masterpiece. And actually, think about the story for everyone listening. Think about the story of how you met your husband, wife, life partner, right? Think about the first time you told that story. It was a little bit more bulky than it should be. And you noticed that because people's eyes glazed over and you stopped telling those parts of the story. There were certain things that people enjoyed. And don't lie, you embellished on those little elements a little bit. I know the story of how my wife and I met. I mean, it is a theatrical masterpiece in itself. Like I say certain things, she says certain things, we say things together, we hold hands, we look at each other, and we're like, so that's how we met. It is an impressive story that we have practiced thousands of times, just like everyone that's listening. And that's the way a business story should be. The problem is most people, if they focus on it at all, it is a case study. So let's break down what that looks like a little bit. So I believe that stories fit into 4 quadrants. You have the first part, the identification of what the problem is or what the objection is. You then have the analysis and implementation piece. Now, the analysis and implementation, by the way, is usually where people spend all of their time. I'm going to suggest you spend 20% of your time at the most in that space. Then the outcome that you have is the next piece. A lot of people will barely know the outcome because a lot of salespeople, they don't stay connected with the sales. So because of that, it goes off. They don't really know. And a lot of times they don't even really know. I worked with $1 billion tech company once that they were like, I had to interview them for this story I told, like I worked for the organization from stage. And I said, why did they move into the cloud? And of course, it was because of how amazing the salesperson was. And I'm like, no, I'm not buying that. Why did they move to the cloud? You said you've been chasing them for years. They didn't know. They had to go back and ask. Turns out this was a guy that had the mindset. He worked for a big government agency. If it ain't broke, let's not fix it. Okay, well, that was fine right up until the server crashed just before the holidays. And it was Christmas time and they couldn't run payroll. And 2,000 people were like, David ruined Christmas because we can't, get our salary. And he had to keep all of his team in over the Christmas holidays so that he could get everyone paid before New Year's Eve, while probably everybody worried about losing their jobs, right? So firstly, you need to attach a real person's name. First name's fine. If for those people in highly regulated industries, change the name to protect the innocent if you need to. But the thing that you need to understand is the real problem up front is more than just they had this ROI issue. And the outcome is more than just they had this ROI outcome. And then there's the moral of the story, which is, I would suggest, about 10%, because if you don't imply specifically what they need to take from it, everybody considers things differently, right? Depending on whether you've had your morning coffee or not, your perception can be different. Whether you've had a fight with your husband or wife, your perception can be different. Your upbringing, your cultural background, everything is different. Now, notice that I've said 20% for breaking out the implementation, which is where you want to spend most of your time hitting them with jargon, and 10% for the moral. That's 30%. Notice that the other 70% isn't talked about because we're talking about the beginning state and the end state for the customer. Now, here's what's key. To talk about beginning and end state, I say 35% in both places, but not the way you would think. You've got to understand there is a real cost of a problem, an opportunity cost of a problem, and an emotional cost of the problem. And all three must be discussed at the beginning and the end to really have a paradigm shift within the customer's mind, which, by the way, statistically proven, if you can give a customer a paradigm shift, you get untold loyalty that you just don't get with discounted prices and great customer service. So let's talk about how to break those elements up. And the best example I can give you is, years ago, I started your equivalent of a college, and we decided, and for those people that don't know the value of niching and creating a unified message that separates you from everyone else, gosh, you're making sales harder for yourself than you need to. But we decided that we were going to work with just tradespeople, and more specifically, we started with just electricians. And I remember I went every now and then, and by the way, if you're a sales leader, anytime your salespeople give you an excuse, my favorite question to ask is, when did you decide that? Because just like stories, short circuit the logical mind, speak to the emotional mind when you're closing a customer. They also short circuit the logical mind and speak to the emotional mind when people are having negative self-talk. So I love asking that question, because when you ask, they then give you this story that's mostly ridiculous for why the market has changed or what's going on. But what I used to do is I used to say, when my sales team weren't performing, what's going on? They then tell me the market had changed. I'd say, when did you decide that? I'd hear this ridiculous story. I'm like, all right, pick any lead. You know, if they blamed the leads, I'd say, pick any lead in the deck. I would take it and I would go sell to it. Well, I think they wanted to have a laugh. They picked the furthest away appointment that I could possibly go to. I was in Melbourne. It was all the way out in Lilydale. I drove 45 minutes out and I said, well, what problems do you have in your business? And he looked at me. I mean, he's an electrician. He's looking at this guy in a suit and he's like, well, what do you mean I've got problems? I don't have any problems. Who's this guy in a suit telling me I've got problems? And I knew, because all we did was work with electricians back then, that if I responded with just this, really, you don't have any problems? The last 60 electricians that I've spoken to in the last 30 days say they've got this problem, this problem, this problem. Sure, you don't have any of those? They would then open up and go, well, actually, I've got all those problems and all these as well. That's the power of knowing your avatar. But this guy didn't say that. He's like, no, I don't really have any of these. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've just driven out 45 minutes to go. So everybody's waiting for me to fail when I get back to the office. There is no way I can't try and push this a little further. So out of desperation, and I can imagine, I was younger then, desperation was probably the best word I could give you. I said, really? You don't have any problems at all? And he's like, well, I guess if I had to think about it, my staff don't clean up after themselves. So I jumped on this and I was like, I'm in the world of real cost, by the way, at the moment. And I'm like, really? How much is that costing you? Mate, not much. Like, I pay my staff like $25 an hour. I've got to send them back maybe $50 here and there. Not really going to, I mean, I'm selling $10,000 trainings per person. Not exactly going to buy it, right? So I went to the world of opportunity cost and I said, look, I'm sure you don't see as many clients as, you know, your staff, but do you go and see any people? He's like, yeah, I mean, if, you know, I probably go and see 10 people a month. I said, okay, well, if you were to see 10 people a month, do you ever get any referrals? He said, yeah, I mean, a lot of the time I get like 3 or 4 referrals if I was to go see 10 people. I said, well, are they usually the smaller deals or the larger deals? And he said, well, no, usually the larger. I mean, we're doing an entire wiring job for a factory right now. The referral came from the CEO who I just fixed their light on their pool at their family home. He said, so they're the bigger deals, but, you know, sometimes smaller. I said, well, what's the minimum? He said, well, sometimes up to 100,000, but, you know, $1,000, I guess we could say as a minimum. I'm like, okay, so if you were to go see 10 people, you would get between 3,000 and 4,000 at very minimum in referrals. He's like, yes, that would be fair. I said, okay, interesting. So how many referrals do your staff get? He's like, oh, they'd be lucky to get 1 or 2. I'm like, I'm confused. Do they not see as many people as you? I thought you said that I would have expected you would see more people, less people. And he's like, no. I mean, if I see 10, they see 40. I said, so why are they not getting like 12 referrals? I mean, at minimum, you would have got 12 to 16, right? And he's like, well, I'm not quite sure. I said, do you think it might be because they're not cleaning up after themselves? He's like, oh, I never thought of it that way. I said, so let's think about it this way. You make about $1,000 worst case off referrals. If you were seeing 4 times as many people, that's like 12,000 at a minimum in referrals. They're getting maybe 1 or 2, call it 2. It's like $10,000 per staff member in lost referrals per month. How many staff do you have? He said, I've got 5. I said, so you could potentially be losing $50,000 in lost referrals because your staff aren't cleaning up after themselves. Do you spend money on ads at the moment to get more leads? He said, well, I wouldn't have to if I was getting 50 more leads a month. This is opportunity cost. I then moved into the realm of emotional cost, which, by the way, the first two will get somebody to move to making a decision. The last one gets them to make it now. This is what shortens sales cycles. I said, does it upset you to know that you're losing all this money, plus losing all this money in advertising costs just because your staff aren't cleaning up after themselves? He's like, well, I'm upset now. And then I asked the key question, does it ever get to a Friday night And this is me using my empathy muscle. Again, something introverts are great at, extroverts need to develop. But I use my empathy muscle, and I imagined that this guy must be getting phone calls on a Friday night for staff not cleaning up after themselves. I said, does it ever get to a Friday night? You get a phone call from an irate customer. Somebody hasn't cleaned up after themselves. You can't get the staff member on a phone, so you have to go. It's like it happens all the time. As a matter of fact, my wife and my daughter aren't talking to me right now because I just missed her dance recital. But what was I going to do? I got a customer call, like one bad review on Yelp or Google. It doesn't matter how much I spend on ads. That's going to burn me. So yes, I went out. Now think about how much he wants to change this problem. It's costing him the cost of the trainings every month, and his wife's not talking to him. His daughter's not talking to them. That's why he purchased right away. Now, the end result, right, the implementation is they did customer service training. Who cares? The outcome was they got about $37,000 in extra referrals. They kept spending money on ads, but they didn't really need to. But they grew into it. Of course, yes, they saved those little $50 in service fees. But he hasn't missed a dance recital or a kids' football game since. So what's the moral of the story? Sometimes the problems we don't see are the ones that are costing our business and our personal lives more than anything. Think about how that story, that one story, got me more deals in every networking conversation. Any single telemarketer that would pick up the phone and call would tell that story instead of pushing for a meeting based on a logical proposition. And that's why we grew to the largest education facility or the fastest growing educational facility in the country within 3 years. I mean, we had 3,500 students from a new school to 3,500 students in 3 years. One story. I believe most businesses are one story away from the rapid growth business they deserve. And most corporations may need one story per sales play, but they always overcomplicate it. So I say less is more. Pick one story, choose your battle, implement that into your organization, and then focus on a total sales system.
It's a really, really good story. And it makes me want to ask you a question that we always ask when we get people from a sales background on. Do you think you can persuade someone, or do you think they persuade themselves? Where do you sit on that debate?
I think the word persuade is a horrible word. I think that the definition, well, let's go back to the original definition of the word sales. The word sales was derived from the Scandinavian term to serve. And I believe, in my heart of hearts, that the best way to serve your clients. Now, this has I will preface. If you have a product or service that you sell that does not benefit your client, don't even take my advice. I hope you fail. Truthfully, if you work for an organization that has a product that doesn't help their clients and doesn't care to change that, you should go work elsewhere. There's plenty of jobs available. But if you truly do, the best way to serve your clients is to get them out of their own way and get them to use your product and service to better their lives. And if you don't, there's a chance they'll meet with a salesperson that has a lesser product or service that then sells to them. So in my mind, you have, as a salesperson, have a duty of care to get the client out of their own way. In my mind, the customer doesn't want to be persuaded. The customer wants to believe in you. And that is your job. So if you want to use the word persuade, as much as I feel that the word persuade will disenfranchise a lot of people that feel that sales is missing a lot of authenticity, and I believe that we need to bring that authenticity back, then yes, the job of a salesperson is to persuade the customer to do what's in their best interest. Just like somebody that's sitting in a drug recovery center knows the person that's coming in doesn't want to give up heroin, but it's in their best interest to do so. I believe that most salespeople have the same responsibility. The problem is that sales is not about you as a salesperson. Networking isn't, public speaking isn't. And because you make it about you, you feel like it has to be this contrived persuasion. And to me, well, that's the wrong mindset to have when you go into a sale. Truthfully, most products help customers. And I've worked with people in insurance that say, well, I just need to sell to anyone. And then you discover this passion for helping a group of people and they get explosive growth. So I would say if you feel like you're persuading rather than helping, you've got the wrong mindset. I'm not saying you're selling the wrong product. I'm not saying you're a bad individual. I'm saying you've got the wrong mindset.
Beautiful. Beautifully put. Matthew, I feel like we could probably talk to you all day. There's loads more that we had, loads more we could have got over. We'll have to have you back if you would give us that honour. If people want to work with you, want to learn more about you, all across the board, from starting out salespeople to business leaders, where should they start that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a couple answers to that. So I would go to theintrovertsedge.com. As I said, you don't need to buy the book. Just download the first chapter if you're an introvert, and I'll give you overwhelming evidence you can sell, and I'll give you that full 7-step process. If you should also check out the Introverts Edge podcast, because there are a bunch of introverts that are outing themselves. I have this thing where I try to get everybody that I know that's introverted, that is in one of these so-called extroverted arenas, to out themselves as an introvert. And, you know, I put a ton of stuff on social media to really help people, you know, grow, because that's how I learn. So I share a ton of stuff there as well. If, on the other hand, you are in a senior leadership role and you haven't had an introvert talk on your stage, trust me, I don't talk about introversion that much. Yes, I talk about my personal story, but no organization wants to hire the introverted speaker. It's why I talk about storytelling. It's why I literally got named by Selling Power magazine as the sales kickoff speaker of the year because of storytelling. But don't get me wrong, I'm going to inspire every introvert in that audience to realize that they're going to dominate those extroverts next year.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Matthew.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.